The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Our Bubble or Nothing series continues today with a look at the Spurs season. They sit on the outside of the playoffs in the heated race for that 8 spot, 4 games behind the Grizzlies for the final ticket. DeMar DeRozan averaging 22-5 this season, but no LaMarcus Aldridge, who is out for the season with a shoulder injury. Look who's kind enough to join us now. Former Spur, NBA champion, our friend Bruce Bowen. Bruce, it's so good to see you. It has been a while, and obviously to see that signature bow tie. We'll get to you in a minute, sir. Thank you again for the time. I'm going to start with my man Max here. Max, how much do you think Pop is to blame for the Spurs' regression?
Well, he has some blame to accept, of course. Look, Greg Popovich is like the greatest American leader we have right now. Pop for president, right? And he has an enormous amount to do with the great success the Spurs have had over the last couple of decades. You know, since he's been the head coach of the team, he's done an amazing job. But I'm sure he would be the first to tell you no one's perfect. That includes him. And whether he would like to have a do-over, for example, with the Kawhi situation, or whether he says, no, I'm consistent with my philosophy, and that's just the way it fell, the chips fell in that situation. You know, however you want to slice it, Kawhi is no longer on the team, and he has not been replaced with a real franchise player. And as a result of that, even though the Spurs compete, and Stephen A., whenever you lament the process, right, when what you're talking about is a team that just makes an honest competition for the championship every year. You put the best team together, you play as hard as you can, you do as well as you can. And that's Greg Popovich's Spurs. And I agree with you, that's the best way to run a franchise. Whatever we think about the process in other respects, Popovich's process is the best way to run a franchise. But that doesn't mean it's perfect. And that doesn't mean it applies to all situations in such a way that it optimizes your chances to win a championship all the time. The handling of the Kawhi Leonard situation was not good. Popovich's lieutenants in the press, you know, Tony Parker and others were talking about Kawhi. I had that same injury. Kawhi could play through it and further alienated Kawhi. Now, maybe he would have left anyway, but certainly it didn't make things better. And my suspicion is if Popovich had to do it again, he'd do it a little differently. Or if he wouldn't and he would just stay consistent, then that consistent approach is a large reason why they've won 5 championships, but it has also contributed to the fact that while they're a competitive team, they're not a playoff powerhouse at the moment.
Well, the question is, again, to answer the question, how much of the Spurs' regression is on Popovich? I agree with you. I would say some, albeit to some degree not intentionally. And here's where it hits me. You know, I got a lot of love and respect for Popovich, and he's obviously widely respected. He's a good man. We all know this. People that know him even a little bit say this about him and what have you. But what we have to remember, and Bruce will appreciate where I'm going with this, whether it's right or wrong, we have to pay attention to the actual reporting that took place on the San Antonio Spurs during that time that Kawhi Leonard was injured. There were people who were questioning the severity of his injury, how he could have, you know, Tony Parker went on the record and said that his right quad injury that he had suffered from earlier was 100 times worse. He was saying it from a motivational perspective, but it might have been taken out of context. And then you heard stuff like Kawhi Leonard, that was the last straw when he was listed out of games, you know, on the injury report. I forgot what it said, but it was something along the lines of, you know, injury. And I forgot exactly the wording. Is I got to look it up, but it was something that turned him off as well. Then you hear stuff about how, excuse me, San Antonio was a bit boring. He had his eyes on LA all along. All of this is an excuse or whatever the case may be. But what it comes down to is this. To me, the defining moment is in March of 2018 when supposedly they had the players confront Kawhi Leonard to find out whether or not he was coming back, what his status was, because they were tired of going back and forth with all of this. It is widely believed, admittedly so by those who may not be in the know, but it's widely believed that, excuse me, if players come to you, particularly the Tony Parkers, Manu Ginobili's of the world, and they have thoughts and feelings, it's sort of an extension of Greg Popovich because there's a certain crew of guys that he trusts more than others, obviously, and they could say things others can't. So if they're coming at you in a certain way, it was really Popovich who was doing it, but utilized them to do it for him. Again, I'm not saying that's accurate by any stretch of the imagination. I do not know. But if you speak to people close to Kawhi, if you speak to people that were that felt like they were in the know, that were communicating to some degree with Kawhi's people at that particular moment in time, it was believed that there was a rift between Kawhi and the organization, not just because of how his injury was handled, but some of the stuff that was sifting out of the organization that he did not take too kind to. You can't say that about the San Antonio Spurs and don't look at Greg Popovich because you know he's the face of that franchise and he rules it with an iron fist. That's the only thing that you can say. I don't blame him for anything, but you can't completely absolve him and act like he had nothing to do with what their present state of affairs are, because if Kawhi Leonard was still there, then obviously they would be better than what they are. He's not there, and that's unfortunate.
You know, you guys make two great valid points. This is what you all do. And I appreciate that. But at the same time, I don't think that you can put the fault or the regression of the San Antonio Spurs on Greg Popovich. The fact that you had the whole Kawhi scenario, it was very unfortunate. But players have a tendency to change their minds when others get involved. And for Tony to make the statements that he made, Tony's statements were born out of the fact that he ruptured his quad muscle, whereas Kawhi didn't rupture his. The whole team meeting aspect of things, one thing that I can say is that Pop is a man that lives without regrets because he believes in the process of, hey, we're going to do our best and we let the chips fall where they may. And a lot of that has fallen upon a lot of guys that are in that locker room as well. And at that time, it was more about the players. The players who have championship experience, the players that have learned things from prior Hall of Fame players as to how to handle situations when things get a little messy. Let's bring it to one another.
Bruce?
And that's what transpired. Yes.
Bruce, let me throw this question out at you, because the people that know, they look at you and they remember. Hold on, Max. They look at you and they see that you won championships playing under Greg Popovich with the San Antonio Spurs. They forget that you played for Larry Brown in Philadelphia, albeit briefly. They forget that you played for Pat Riley. But one of the reasons I bring this up is because when it comes to Pat Riley, we all know that he's the winner within and how great Pat Riley is. I think even Pat Riley would concede that there's a slight regret because he's an old guard. He holds on to his process, his system, and things of that nature. And maybe you might have needed to handle LeBron James a tad bit differently than he did. Is it not possible that Greg Popovich could potentially feel that way when it comes to Kawhi Leonard?
I don't think that's the way that he... No, I don't believe that. I don't believe that because of the respect that Greg Popovich showed to players. And you talk about Pat Riley. I remember all the times of how he handled things. And that was the biggest difference that I felt. A lot of people complained about Pat Riley's three-hour practices. I didn't have a problem with him because I felt like it made me better. And maybe if you slept at night, you wouldn't have any issues with that. But this, when I got to San Antonio and I recognized how Pop did things, it was more about the player. And that was a huge difference from me as far as recognizing what Riley was to what Greg Popovich is. They're both men of character. They're both men that really believes in the process of working hard, and we let the chips fall where they may. All we can do is that. But at the same time, Pop was that individual that was delving a little bit deeper into the private side and figuring out what actually motivates certain guys and not treating everybody the same because you can't. It's just like being a parent. When you have multiple kids, you know that you can't just treat each and every one of those children the same. You have to go about it in a different way.
I would say, guys, also for Popovich, what he's going to have to prove, not like, I mean, he's one of the great coaches in the history of American team sports. As I said, I think he's the best leader we got in this country right now. I'd vote for him for president today if he ran. But everyone always, there's always stuff to prove in life and work to be done. And something he has to show, like just like we say, hey, Bill Belichick, he's the greatest football coach of all time. What's he going to do without Tom Brady? What is Popovich going to do with the rest of his career as a coach without Tim Duncan? And the reason I bring up Duncan is because when you look at the all-time greats, the dynastic teams with great leaders who are, you know, who are on the sidelines, they usually have an extension of themselves on the field of play who is an all-league sort of player. So Belichick had Tom Brady, Joe Torre had Derek Jeter, and Popovich had Tim Duncan through those championships. Even as Duncan faded, he was still an extension of the coach on the floor and all world. Can Popovich win a championship or compete for one, Bruce, without, like, he needs to find that extension of himself on the floor. And that player's talent has to be pitched at a certain level, I think.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/firsttake. That's amazon.com/firsttake to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And unfortunately, you learn from those players. Tim Duncan learned from David Robinson. Even though Tim was incredibly talented, you had LaMarcus Aldridge, who was not going to participate due to injury, who he was learning from Tim Duncan. DeJounte Murray, who had to sit out with an injury, he was learning things from Tony Parker. So, you know, for Pop, he doesn't have to prove anything, Max. The fact that he has won championships at this level and gotten guys to places where they would not have been before, coaches to different places, and being a leader, you know, being a leader is being able to influence others in an aspect where at the end of the day, you look at him, you're saying, man, mm-hmm. Look at what he's been able to accomplish, even without the other stuff.
Lakers GM Rob Pelinka said on a conference call that Dwight Howard has not informed the team whether he will play or sit when the NBA resumes the season in Orlando. Howard has said publicly that he may sit out the season to help address racial inequality following the death of George Floyd. Here's a look at the notable players choosing to opt out of the NBA's resumption of the season, including Howard's teammate Avery Bradley, who cited family concerns for his decision. Obviously, this would be a huge choice by Dwight Howard because his team was favored to win it all. Someone who knows about winning it all, NBA champion Bruce Bowen, is still with us here. Bruce, I'll start with you. How should we feel about players choosing to opt out?
I think it's about respect, first and foremost, Molly. We have to respect individuals that have a call to affect change in our country, let alone worldwide. And for those that have made the statements or chosen to necessarily not participate, that's fine with them. I just want to take this moment to now look at all those other individuals that they say they love the game so much they do it for free. Now, we're talking about today's time where guys make millions and millions of dollars, and they are trying to give the public something different as a difference of the entertainment. Now it's about hope. Now it's about we're getting back to normalcy, because if there's anything that we need in our society right now, it's something that we could feel good about as far as getting back to what used to be the norm.
No question, Bruce. And obviously there's so many layers to this because we're talking about COVID and then obviously the racial unrest as well. We will get Stephen A. and Max's take in just a moment.
Welcome back to First Take. In case you're just joining us, Lakers GM Rob Pelinka said on a conference call that Dwight Howard has not informed the team whether he will play or sit when the NBA resumes the season in Orlando. Howard has said publicly that he may sit out the season to help address racial inequality following the death of George Floyd. Here's a look at the notable players choosing to opt out of the NBA's resumption of the season. You can see it right there, including Howard's teammate Avery Bradley, who cited family concerns for his decision. Bruce Bowen's still here with us. He just gave us our take. And Stephen A., I will now ask you the same question. How should we feel about players choosing to opt out of the resumption of the season?
Well, to me, that's a two-part answer. The one answer is if it has anything to do with the coronavirus pandemic, we should completely and fully respect their decision. That's a health issue. Obviously, they have concerns about not just themselves, but their families. Take Avery Bradley's situation into consideration, having a six-year-old child that has had respiratory issues. That's simply something that he just doesn't want to even entertain, and I can totally respect that. Anybody who wants to miss games because of the pandemic, absolutely, completely support that. If there's another reason, I'm sorry. I just don't feel that way. And I say that respectfully. When we talk about racial, systemic racism and things of that nature, that has been existing long before Dwight Howard was ever born, and it'll be here when he's gone. You still have a job to do. You signed up to do that. You go ahead and you do that, especially playing for the NBA. There's, and I say that respectfully because I want to leave some wiggle room for people to understand that I do appreciate and totally understand guys' sentiments in this regard. But the bottom line is this. The NBA is not inhibiting you from being active with the protests, from taking your political or social issue positions. A matter of fact, they're encouraging it and they're supporting it. So in light of that reality, combined with the fact that you have a guy like LeBron James in the National Basketball Association who's got his movement going more than a vote, and it's being supported by a plethora of athletes and beyond, and you have other players that are actively involved in social issues who are scheduled to show up in Orlando, why wouldn't you be there if you're Dwight Howard? Specifically, since you're literally a year removed from contemplating whether or not your career was over. You wanted to play, you wanted to pursue the championship. There's nobody stopping Dwight Howard or anybody else from continuing to address the causes that they want to and feel the need to address. But that should not stop you from showing up to work in pursuit of a championship. He's being paid $2.5 million. I think he's worth more than that. He's averaging 7-7. Averaging 19 minutes a game, coming off the bench, being a tremendous spark plug for the Los Angeles Lakers, and really validating that his career indeed is not over. He can make a contribution to a lot of teams. But the first rule of ability is availability. You got to be there. And in this particular instance, I think if he's healthy, he should be there. Any issues of racial strife or what have you that you want to address, you can address it the minute those 2 hours playing on the court in Orlando is over. You need to get back there and play with your team. That's my position.
Well, there's tremendous overlap between this pandemic, Stephen A., and these social issues. George Floyd may not have been the kind of inflection point or moment in American political and social life that it's been had it not been for this pandemic. In fact, this is a point that you and I have discussed and you made on a previous show. Stephen A., you're fond of saying that when white people catch a cold, black people get what? Pneumonia, right? Well, pneumonia. When white people don't wear face masks, black people get coronavirus. It is disproportionately affecting communities of color, not just here, but around the world, but especially here. We have something like 4% of the population of the world, but some enormous percentage of coronavirus cases because of our disastrous leadership in this country, or lack thereof. And it's affecting black people disproportionately, African Americans disproportionately. So there's tremendous overlap between the pandemic and social issues. Furthermore, this idea that racism has always been here and it's going to be here long past Dwight Howard, therefore do nothing or work within the system, well, it's his prerogative to say, no, wait a minute. I want to work not from within the system, or just because it has been before me and it will outlast me doesn't mean I shouldn't do anything. And this is the way I feel. I'm best served in this cause, especially when that dovetails with, wow, this is risky, or I don't think that we should be causing a distraction right now. So for those reasons, I think it's fine if someone wants to opt out, even if it's not just exclusively about their own health or the health of their family or even others. I think they're perfectly entitled to opt out for other reasons. Again, everyone wants to kind of get back to normal. But as you know better than I, Stephen A., because you are African-American and I am not, normal has benefited white people and been detrimental to black people. And so largely many in this country, well, of all, you know, in a multiracial coalition are saying, before we get back to normal, let's make normal something that's better for everybody, not just some people.
Well, first of all, I would appreciate it respectfully if you don't use, if you don't interpret what I mean for me. First of all, I'm not advocating that we return to normal. I understand that these are abnormal times and it's for the good as far as I'm concerned. I like the fact that society to some degree is in an uproar over the kind of things that have been transpiring. But let's be real about what the situation is. When the dust settles, and it will settle because it always does, there is some degree of normalcy that we have to return to. And as a result of that, we have to weigh the pros and the cons. Certainly, we want to have an impact, no question about that. But on this show, Bruce Bowen, I brought this up. People want to ignore this reality. I'm not ignoring it because I report on the NBA and commentate on the NBA, and I happen to know these things are true. Tobias Harris came on the show last week and confirmed that one of the reasons, the biggest reason that the guys have elected to play this summer is because if they don't play, the force majeure provision kicks in, that doomsday provision in the collective bargaining agreement that ultimately gives the league a license because of the cancellation of the season to rip up the collective bargaining agreement, labeling all of those contracts null and void, having to restart a negotiation where you'll get considerably less, and they will implement and insert a hard salary cap. I spoke to three owners in the NBA that assured me if the season gets canceled and it forces a new collective bargaining negotiation, a hard salary cap a la the NFL will come into play. What do NFL players complain about all the time? They complain about the rigidity of the NFL, the control that they have, and the fact is that we wish we had the economic freedom that NBA players have. If you're in danger of surrendering that, then to some degree that compromises what you say your goal is as it pertains to these social issues. So we have to at least pay attention to that and understand that we got to play chess because that's what they're going to do. And if you want to win the game, you got to first play the game. That's where I'm coming from, Bruce.
And you know, it takes me back to my grandfather's statements about in sports, grandson, you need an education. You need an education. And utilizing this platform of the NBA, I think, obviously, because I've been a part of the NBA, but I've seen how the NBA, you can use it to your benefit as well. I am not discrediting anyone who chooses not to play, Stephen A., Max. I'm not discrediting them at all. That's their prerogative. But at the same time, this isn't going to change overnight. This is a process, and it's very important that we utilize this time and momentum right now to continue the process of informing individuals how leaders need to change. Leaders need to learn exactly what it is to be an African-American here in this country, what it is to be pulled over. I have two little boys, and they were walking down the street one day, and I had never had this feeling of concern quite like I did, all because of what's going on right now. For me, I think it's even more important for us to get out the message how it is important for us to learn to respect one another. Not only just respect, but leaders need to change in the process as well. But I had never had that feeling of emotions of watching my sons walk through my neighborhood before. What if someone says something to them? So I get it, but at the same time, I know how sports are able to bring people together. We talk about the Olympics, the Jesse Owens way back in the day when all the turmoil that was going on then. But we were able to put aside our differences over sport. And I think we still have that opportunity to put aside certain things for a moment to enjoy the sports that we love so dearly. But then as soon as that sport is over, we continue with the process of what we're doing as far as moving forward in life.
That's powerful, Bruce. And about your children, I can only try to empathize because in light of what's happened in this country since George Floyd, you would not think that what happened to Rayshard Brooks would happen. Get shot in the back and murdered, and, you know, also on video after nothing. You know, he was parked in his car and was talking calmly to police. So I hear you, and my heart goes out to you and people who are in that same situation with their children. And I think that this is a time where players like Dwight Howard, Stephen A., feel that there's so much going on. Maybe we shouldn't play the end of a basketball season and the playoffs. And to the NBA's credit, they're not taking a hardline stance with those players. Quickly, Stephen A., your point about the owners, you heard from three owners who said, we're going to take a hardline stance. The owners are not necessary to have a professional basketball league. They're an extraneous level. They do provide capital, but the players could probably pool capital and get loans, et cetera, to start a professional basketball league with all the world's best talent if the owners really wanted to opt out of the CBA.
Well, a couple of things. Number one, let's make sure that we're fair and responsible here from the standpoint that certainly I think the officer that shot Rayshard Brooks in the back definitely should have been arrested. I think he should have been charged with manslaughter, but let's not act like he was just sitting in his car being quiet. Ultimately, there was a confrontation that took place with the police officers, and he got the taser gun first. So we have to be fair in highlighting that. He wasn't just sitting in his car when it happened. There was a tussle that took place thereafter, and the law will handle that. But I think that case is significantly different than George Floyd, because George Floyd was straight murder, whereas I think this particular case might be manslaughter instead of murder, because there's no excuse to shoot the man in the back.
Right, but the point is still of Black Lives Matter is we had previously, and maybe still do, and hopefully that's changing, a high tolerance for dead African Americans in this country, right? So he was told, like, the fact that he was shot and killed in that situation and that he's black is probably not coincidental.
All I'm saying is that we just can't be on the show and just say it like that and not say something else. That's all I'm trying to say in terms of what actually happened on video. Outside of that, in the end, what it comes down to with the owners is this. The owners are about business. They're about business. And this racial strife that's been taking place in this country, they're going to pay attention to that. They're going to, if they're smart, they'll do what they can do. But it is not going to stop them if this season doesn't end up getting completed from ripping up that CBA and moving forward. That is why the players are in Orlando willing to play and make the sacrifice, because they don't want to compromise what they spent years negotiating to get. Make no mistake about it. Dwight Howard has to remember that.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture X Card. Earn unlimited 2X miles on everything you buy and turn everyday purchases into extraordinary trips. Plus, receive premium travel benefits, like access to over 1,300 airport lounges and a $300 annual credit for bookings through Capital One Travel. Unlock a whole new world of travel with a Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
I think we are getting ready to really see how fun that offense can really be. I think being able to have a guy like Cam Newton that can run the ball, they're able to spread guys out, and then being able to be that viable threat in the passing game that he could just tuck the ball and run. All those great things, those intangibles that Cam Newton is going to bring to the table, if he's able to be accurate with the ball, the sky's the limit for that offense and that team.
Randy Moss with some high expectations for Patriots' new quarterback, Cam Newton. Meanwhile, Pat's wide at Julian Edelman welcoming his new quarterback with excitement via social media. That prompted a response from his old QB, Tommy Brady, who replied, "I will always be your number one."
with a wink emoji. We welcome back NFL analyst Ryan Clark. Good stuff. I love all of it. Stephen, I'll start with you. What do you make of Brady's post?
I think that's something that applies even more pressure to Cam Newton because, in other words, the GOAT is watching. Tom Brady is looking at it, and he's saying, don't forget who I am. Don't forget what I did for that organization. Don't forget what I did for you, Julian Edelman. And we'll see, you know, what he does when he gets there compared to what I did for you. That's the way I took it. Obviously, I don't know. But when I saw that, him sitting there saying, I'm still number one. In other words, bro, I don't give a damn who you got coming to succeed me. They ain't gonna be me. That's what Tom Brady was saying. And so to me, that's the way I took it. And you know the folks in Massachusetts definitely are going to take it that way. So it's gonna be real interesting to see how Cam Newton embraces that comment.
Yeah, I don't see it like that. I'm sorry. I think, you know, Edelman's saying something. Brady's getting in on it. There are two things that happen on social media, you know, with respect to stuff like this, at least two, but here are two of them. One is someone tweets at you or sends you something on Instagram, like, directly. And it sort of just requires, it puts a social demand on you to respond. And those can be tricky because if you're in Tom Brady's position, you got to decide carefully how to respond because it's going to be interpreted on shows like this and by fans all over the place. And the other is when you decide to chime in because you want to have a little fun. And here's Tom Brady having a little fun. That's it, Stephen A. He's having a little fun. He's, you know, it's his favorite receiver talking about another quarterback. And he's reminding him, you know, I'm your ex, but I was your first. That's it.
Nah, hey, listen, I think it's some fun, but it's also a little level of petty. And two, it shows that even when you're the GOAT, you have a little bit of insecurity. Because if Julian Edelman had tweeted something about Jared Stidham, I don't think Tom Brady would have had to remind him, remember all the good times that we had, Julian. But now, you know, if you're Tom Brady, you got a little insecurity because you still remember, even when you get the glow up, like you remember the picture from the combine and you didn't have any muscles. And then you remember the 40 you ran that ended up being a 5'2" long. You start to remember those things, but then you have this great career and you get the glow up and now you rock the Tom Ford and people call you the GOAT. And you leave and you like, man, ain't no way they gonna get somebody as good as what they used to have. You know what I'm saying? So now he's in Tampa Bay. He got Beyonce in the headphones to the left, to the left. He playing Irreplaceable. And then all of a sudden comes this 6'6", muscled up, ripped up, can run the football, can change the offense. Oh, they went and got him? Now this ain't Jared Stidham. And so now Julian Edelman, that's his guy. We not only played ball together, but you're one of my best friends and we kick it. And now you're accepting this guy and you're saying all that, you know, and you're tweeting with open arms to him. Let me remind y'all who I was. Don't forget about me. You know, y'all supposed to be missing me. There's not supposed to be a guy that can step into that shadow and fulfill that spot. And so Tom Brady was just sending a little message out there. Hey, I'm watching and don't remember what I did. So, you know, if you ever walking outside of Gillette Stadium and there's somebody in a trench coat and a hat and some sunglasses, it might be Tom Brady lurking in the bushes doing a little stalker bait, trying to see what his old boo doing.
One thing that I think you're absolutely right about, Ryan, I think it's a good point, is Tom Brady, I always thought, left the cupboard bare for Belichick, and that was by design, right? His original design was to stay. But when he could see he wasn't going to get paid like he was still the quarterback he was a couple years ago, he was like, and the Patriots always kicked the can down the road in terms of his contract, and he's like, oh, now you're not going to take care of me, I'm out of here. And he left him without, forget about a guy like Brissett, may or may not be a quarterback you want to be your franchise quarterback, but Garoppolo, who just went to the Super Bowl. He's like, okay, good luck with this kid Stidham's playing, you know, passed the ball four times as a professional player. Oh, wait a minute. Now all of a sudden, I didn't leave the cupboard so bare. I left it bare, but Belichick went up
exactly.
And did his thing and scooped up Cam for pennies on the dollar. I think that is a good point, and maybe there's something underneath it.
Right. Real quick, Stephen A., I didn't know if you wanted to jump in there, but do you think there's any part of Tom that's low-key a little insecure that Cam might steal his thunder there? Because we know Cam's all flash in New England.
Yeah. No, listen. Listen, I absolutely believe that. And I don't think, and this is a conversation for another day, I don't think Cam Newton and Tom Brady are actually that much different from each other. They do a lot of the same things. Tom just does them. Tom does them like a 40-something-year-old white man, and Cam does them like a 31-year-old black man. So there's cultural differences in the way that they're moved, but in the way, but the YouTube channels, the clothes, and the social media promotion, those dudes are a lot alike. And so I do believe that Tom, in some way, is like, hey, hold on now. You know, when I left this thing, it wasn't going to be no replacing Tom Brady. Now you have a guy who's been in that spotlight, a guy who is also famous, a guy who's also an MVP. And if he could take this team back to a Super Bowl, you are replaced in a situation where you didn't leave it that way.
Now, Belichick wins.
Ryan Clark.
What? Stop. What, man?
Stop.
What?
Here's the reason why. And I'm being very serious here. I'm not going to go too far here. Ryan Clark, are you looking at me? Can you see me, brother? Can you see me right now?
I actually can't, but I can hear you.
Can't. Okay. Cam Newton is going to be in Massachusetts. He'll never be Tom Brady to those folks there. Never. Y'all go ahead and discuss why. It's very obvious. Stop.
You are 100% correct. You are 100% correct. But you also have to realize this. Tom Brady's life isn't built around the love from outside of that building, even though he loves those fans. Tom Brady's legacy is on the field of Gillette Stadium. Tom Brady's legacy in Foxborough is what he was able to build from a football perspective.
Ryan.
And though in Massachusetts, he'll never... Listen, I work with somebody in my facility, our head administrator who runs the front desk, who's the first person you see, is from Foxborough, Massachusetts. She's 27 years old. When Tom Brady left, she said to me, it feels like I'm in the worst divorce that's ever happened. He's all I've ever known. And then when Gronk went to Tampa Bay, and this is the quote, she said her best friend texted her and said, not only did our husband leave us, but he got the dog in the divorce settlement. So I know how those people look at Tom Brady, how they feel about him, how important he is to them. I'm not talking about, it's not about what the fans say about Cam Newton. If the fans start tweeting about Cam Newton, Tom Brady's not gonna go back at them. It was Julian Edelman tweeting or posting about Cam Newton. That's important to Tom Brady. What Tom Brady was in that locker room is important to Tom Brady. What Tom Brady was to the New England Patriots as it pertains to football is important to him. And there was nobody to step into those shoes and be able to fill them when Tom Brady left. As Max mentioned, no Brissett, no Garoppolo,
Ryan,
none of those guys.
But Ryan,
where there is somebody that could step in.
If you put these guys on lie detector tests, I don't think this is about Cam versus Tom Brady. I think for Tom Brady, it's about Tom Brady versus Bill Belichick. And I think for Bill Belichick, it's about Tom Brady versus Bill Belichick. I'll bet you on a lie detector just to say, you know, what's the deal with Cam? If you don't want the thing to go nuts, Tom Brady's like, damn, Bill pulled a rabbit out of hat. He got a guy who might wind up being an elite guy for pennies on the dollar. I thought I had him, you know, because Tom Brady goes to a lovely situation for him, hoping that he will do very well, leaving the cupboard bare for Belichick. See, it was really me all along. That's really what they're competing against, the ghosts of history. You know, who's the GOAT? Who's most responsible for the GOAT franchise? And Belichick, on the other hand, is like, okay, watch this. You moved on. You put yourself in a perfect situation. I hope you do better than us. You're supposed to do better than us, right? I think that's the competition that's taking place, Brady versus Belichick. And Cam is a player drama.
Well, what would buffer your argument more so than anything else is that at age 43, to use your words, the ravine that Tom Brady is about to fall off, or whatever the case may be, Tom Brady still ended up getting $50 million. Cam Newton, 12 years younger, okay, has to have incentives to get him to 7. clearly this
ain't
about Kent.
Yeah, well, that's off an injury. Let's see what his contract is next year.
True story. Netflix has announced that Colin Kaepernick and filmmaker Ava DuVernay have created a series focusing on Cap's formative high school years. Kaepernick will appear as a narrator of the series. Netflix has not released a premiere date for the series. Well, he couldn't get anybody better behind this project. Ava DuVernay is absolutely sensational. Stephen A., I'll start with you. What's your reaction to this Kaepernick series coming out?
Well, it's double-edged. Like you said, Ava DuVernay, she is sensational at what she does. I mean, just go watch 13. Just go watch When They See Us. I mean, you see some of the work that she has done. She is nothing short of sensational. So anytime you have an opportunity to work with her, that is clearly a plus. And I say that knowing that she has been critical of me at times. I don't give a damn. She's still sensational. And I'm certainly not going to be juvenile and failing to give her her credit where credit is due because of the sensational work and the sensational abilities that she has put on display spanning years. She is something special to behold. Having said all of that, what I would say about Colin Kaepernick and this docuseries is this. It's definitely going to be riveting in my estimation if we get to the modern day. If they're saying that it's just going to be about his childhood and, you know, it stops at his years in high school, I can't underestimate anything about her, but I certainly think that it leaves a lot to be desired if we're looking at a story or a docuseries about Colin Kaepernick and it stops at his years in high school in light of what we've seen him accomplish, particularly on a professional level as a football player and ultimately since the whole kneeling issue took fold in 2016. There's so much depth to this individual. It's not to say that those things are not interesting. I'm just saying it can't stop there. If that's where it's going to stop, then it's going to leave us all starving for more because it's certainly not going to be the complete story of him if it stops there. That's the only thing that I'm concerned about. I would like to see it, you know, I don't care how long ago it was, up until now. I don't think it should stop at his high school years. That's all. That's my only concern.
What I take away from this is you want Ava DuVernay or the Ava DuVernay of your day to make a TV show about you, to make a movie about you, to write a book about you. You want to matter, then you don't make the convenient, easy choice in that moment of truth. And as much advice as Kaepernick was getting to just kind of go along, you know, you're not going to, people aren't going to take care of you. You're not going to, you know, this is the prime of your career. You can't fight the power. In fact, because he did, and he was willing to sacrifice whatever remained of his career on the altar of his principles, he is worthy of, his life becomes worthy of examination. It is interesting to people. And he will also transcend his own sport and his time. And he has become an important figure in the history of our country, not just in sports. And that's what this tells me. When someone like Ava DuVernay says, yeah, I'm interested in knowing what makes this guy tick and exploring his background and telling his story, that is a story that's worth telling. That's what it indicates to me. Kaepernick didn't make the easy choice and was willing to sacrifice. And I think that's always respected by people. When you sacrifice for principle, he did it. Sure, it wasn't comfortable and it wasn't easy, but that's why there are stories being told about him by the best storytellers.
Yep. And Stephen A., I understand where you're coming from because obviously we want to see the full picture. I do think it's fascinating to find out how he got here and how his childhood might have led to that, but it seems like maybe that second chapter, well, he's still writing it. So maybe that would be at a later date when we could see the full picture,
maybe so.
How this story ends. Yeah.
All I'm trying to say is imagine Molly sitting at home and watching, and you're very interested mm-hmm. in all the stuff that happened, you know, all the stuff about his life, how he got to this point.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's not just him. It's also the greatness of Ava DuVernay and some of the things that she could crystallize and illuminate for us all. And so as a result of that, you're imagining, okay, let's come to 2016. Let's illuminate what transpired at that particular moment in time when he elected to take a knee. Let's see what level of support that he had, the level of support he didn't have. Let's probe into why that didn't happen. Her greatness combined with his story, you just think about it and just imagine yourself sitting there and it just stops at high school or before any of that transpired. That's not going to be, I'm telling you, you're not, you're, no matter, I don't care how great she is, and she's phenomenal, and how great his story is, you're not going to feel fulfilled if the story stops at him in high school. That's all I'm saying. You're going to want more.
No,
and maybe that's their
saying.
Goal. Maybe that's their purpose. They want us to want more, but you're going to want more.
No, there might be a part two. And one thing I'll just say really quickly on a personal level, I'm fascinated with Sonia Sotomayor, right? The Supreme Court minority female. I'm reading her book.
Sonia Sotomayor. Sotomayor.
So she stopped it 20 years prior, before she got to the Supreme Court, because she felt like it was too many details. But it's still so fascinating to see how they became who they are. So ultimately, I think we'll still be able to see that. But some of the details you're talking about now, Stephen A., where it's like how he actually got to the kneeling, who influenced it, yes, we might not see some of that yet. But I think it will leave us wanting more, and eventually we will get the complete story. We will leave it on that note. There's another story I want to get to involving baseball. We don't have too much time here, but Colorado Rockies outfielder Ian Desmond put out a lengthy post on social media detailing how he made his decision to opt out of the 2020 MLB season, how racism impacted his life in the sport and outside of it as a biracial man. I don't have the full time to read the full post on social media. I encourage you to do that. Essentially, he said, baseball has failed minorities. Desmond's an 11-year veteran. Stephen A., what's your reaction to his comments? I know I couldn't share them with you publicly, but you've read them prior.
I think the sport itself did not fail on purpose. There are people working under the umbrella of the sport that didn't prioritize these issues to with the degree of fervor that we would have liked. But I definitely think when you see their RBI program, reviving baseball in the inner cities and some of the things that they have done, although they can do more, Major League Baseball has done a lot in terms of it being the league. As a team itself, team representatives, they've gone to Dominican, they've gone to Venezuela, they've gone to various places. Because obviously, you know what, you can get minorities coming into this country from other points of the globe, and they might be considerably cheaper for you to acquire and bring over to the United States. I don't know all the stories to it, but when you look at a sport like Major League Baseball, whose audience is clearly older than the NBA's and the NFL's, and you look at the fact that only 7 to 8% of African American in the sport of baseball are African American, that is a problem. They definitely need to address it, and they need to put more muscle behind those efforts in order to do so.
The socio-political leaning of Major League Baseball is conservative. And the reason I bring that up as it relates to race relations is the very definition of social or political conservatism is you're cautious about change. Doesn't mean you're necessarily feared or always against it, but you're cautious about it. You adhere to more tradition, to what you already know, and to the status quo. And if when you talk about race relations in this country, that's going to be bad for black people and people of color, because the status quo and our traditional attitudes towards marginalized people, and let me not marginalize, towards African Americans, it's been terrible. It's been awful. It's been, you know, our original sin, and it's been perpetuated through the years. And so this is where the kind of socio-political leaning of those participating in a sport, and baseball, you know, is stodgy. They resist change more than say the NFL or the NBA. They hold on to the stories of the past and trade on that sort of thing. This is where it affects something like race relations, because if you constantly want things the way they were, and the way they were is, you know, Jackie Robinson, not till 1947, the first black man playing in Major League Baseball. And then it was slow to integrate even after that. The way they were was bad for a group of people. And if you're a member of that group of people, then those who still have those basic impulses will create a culture that you feel, and it rightly is not conducive to the kind of world you want to live in. The kind of socio-political leanings that a person of color playing baseball would be more amenable to their desires would be a more progressive one, one that embraces the change of certain aspects of those of the traditional culture. And I think Desmond is right about baseball in that respect.
Stephen A., I'll just say to you really quickly here, a transition. Jalen Rose came out. He's changing his pick for the NBA Finals. Obviously, we saw some of the Lakers players will no longer be playing. Avery Bradley, and it looks like potentially Dwight Howard. He now thinks it's going to be the Clippers and the Celtics. Mr. Smith, your response to that?
Well, I like the Celtics pick. That's possible. I disagree with him about the Clippers, but I definitely respect his opinion. Jalen knows his basketball. We all know that. And the Clippers are arguably the deepest team in the NBA with Kawhi and Paul George and the rest of the crew. I just believe that LeBron James and Anthony Davis, two of the top five players on the planet, should be enough to overcome that stuff. I am worried because the Clippers can certainly beat them, but I'm just not going to jump off the wagon just yet. By the way, Dwight Howard, I'm told, is working out with the Lakers, and he plans on playing, but we'll see if that's true.
Good for him. Molly, are you sure Jalen feels that way? I know Jalen Rose pretty well. Are you sure he feels that way, Molly?
I'm 100% sure. It's Lakers, now it's Clippers.
How do you know?
It's the switcheroo.
And this, what makes you such
this
an
was
expert?
This was before Dwight Howard. This was just based, I think, solely on the Avery Bradley. Hope I'm not mincing words. Bye, everybody. See you tomorrow.